Chapter 29. My governess, not at all surprised, spoke calmly to them, told them they should very freely come and search her house, if they should bring a constable, and let in none but such as the constable would admit, for it was unreasonable to let in a whole crowd. This they could not refuse, though they were a crowd. So a constable was fetched immediately, and she very freely opened the door. The constable kept the door, and the men he appointed searched the house, my governess going with them from room to room. When she came to my room, she called to me, and said aloud, "Cousin, pray open the door. Here's some gentleman that must come and look into your room." Apostrophe, I had a little girl with me, which was my governess's grandchild, as she called her, and I bade her open the door, and there sat I at work with a great litter of things about me, as if I had been at work all day, being myself quite undressed, with only night clothes on my head, and a loose morning gown wrapped about me. My governess made a kind of excuse for their disturbing me, telling me partly the occasion of it, and that she had no remedy but to open the doors to them, and let them satisfy themselves, for all she could say to them would not satisfy them. I sat still, and bid them search the room if they pleased, for if there was anybody in the house, I was sure they were not in my room. And as for the rest of the house, I had nothing to say to that. I did not understand what they looked for. Everything looked so innocent, and too honest about me, that they treated me civiller than I expected. But it was not till they had searched the room to a nicety, even under the bed, in the bed, and everywhere else where it was possible anything could be hid. When they had done this, and could find nothing, they asked my pardon for troubling me, and went down. When they had thus searched the house from bottom to top, and then top to bottom, and could find nothing, they appeased the mob pretty well, but they carried my governess before the justice. Two men swore that they saw the man whom they pursued go into her house. My governess rattled, and made a great noise, that her house should be insulted, and that she should be used thus for nothing, that if a man did come in, he might go out again presently for aught she knew, for she was ready to make oath that no man had been within her doors all that day as she knew of, and that was very true indeed, that as might be indeed, that as she was above stairs, any fellow in a fright might find the door open, and run in for shelter when he was pursued, but that she knew nothing of it, and if it had been so, he certainly went out again, perhaps at the other door, for she had another door into an alley, and so had made his escape, and cheated them all. This was indeed probable enough, and the justice satisfied himself with giving her an oath, that she had not received, or admitted any man into her house to conceal him, or protect or hide him from justice. This oath she might justly take, and did so, and so she was dismissed. It is easy to judge what a fright I was in upon this occasion, and it was impossible for my governess ever to bring me to dress in that disguise again, for, as I told her, I should certainly betray myself. My poor partner in this mischief was now in a bad case, for he was carried away before my Lord Mayor, and by his worship committed to Newgate, and the people that took him were so willing, as well as able, to prosecute him, that they offered themselves to enter into recognizances, to appear at the sessions and pursue the charge against him. However, he got his indictment deferred, upon promise to discover his accomplices, and particularly the man that was concerned with him in his robbery, and he failed not to do his endeavor, for he gave in my name, whom he called Gabriel Spencer, which was the name I went by to him, and here appeared the wisdom of my concealing my name and sex from him, which, if he had ever known, I had been undone. He did all he could to discover this Gabriel Spencer. He described me, he discovered the place where he said I lodged, and, in a word, all the particulars that he could of my dwelling. But having concealed the main circumstances of my sex from him, I had a vast advantage, and he never could hear of me. He brought two or three families into trouble by his endeavoring to find me out, but they knew nothing of me, any more than that I had a fellow with me, that they had seen, but knew nothing of. And as for my governess, though she was the means of his coming to me, yet it was done at second hand, and he knew nothing of her. This turned to his disadvantage, for having promised discoveries, but not being able to make it good, it was looked upon as trifling with the justice of the city, and he was the more fiercely pursued by the shopkeepers who took him. I was, however, terribly uneasy all this while, and that I might be quite out of the way, I went away from my governesses for a while, but not knowing whither to wander, I took a maid-servant with me, and took the stagecoach to Dunstable, to my old landlord and landlady, where I had lived so handsomely with my Lancashire husband. Here I told her a formal story, that I expected my husband every day from Ireland, and that I had sent a letter to him, that I would meet him at Dunstable at her house, and that he would certainly land, if the wind was fair, in a few days, so that I was come to spend a few days with him till he should come, for he was either come post, or in the Westchester coach, I knew not which, but whichsoever it was, he would be sure to come to that house to meet me. My landlady was mighty glad to see me, and my landlord made such a stir with me, that if I had been a princess I could not have been better used, and here I might have been welcome a month or two, if I had thought fit. But my business was of another nature. I was very uneasy, though so well disguised, that it was scarce possible to detect me, lest this fellow should somehow or other find me out. And though he could not charge me with this robbery, having persuaded him not to venture, and having also done nothing in it myself but run away, yet he might have charged me with other things, and have bought his own life at the expense of mine. This filled me with horrible apprehensions. I had no recourse, no friend, no confidant but my old governess, and I knew no remedy but to put my life in her hands, and so I did. For I let her know where to send to me, and had several letters from her, while I stayed here. Some of them almost scared me out my wits, but at last she sent me the joyful news, that he was hanged, which was the best news to me, that I had heard a great while. I had stayed here 5 weeks, and lived very comfortably indeed, the secret anxiety of my mind excepted, but when I received this letter I looked pleasantly again, and told my landlady, that I had received a letter from my spouse in Ireland, that I had the good news of his being very well, but had the bad news, that his business would not permit him to come away so soon as he expected, and so I was like to go back again without him. My landlady complimented me upon the good news, however, that I had heard he was well. For I have observed, madam, apostrophe says she, you hadn't been so pleasant as you used to be. You have been over head and ears in care for him, I dare say, apostrophe says the good woman. 'Tis easy to be seen there's an alteration in you for the better, apostrophe says she. Well, I am sorry the esquire can't come yet, apostrophe says my landlord. I should have been heartily glad to have seen him. But I hope, when you have certain news of his coming, you'll take a step hither again, madam, apostrophe says he. You shall be very welcome, whenever you please to come. Apostrophe, with all these fine compliments we parted, and I came merry enough to London, and found my governess as well pleased as I was. And now she told me she would never recommend any partner to me again, for she always found, she said, that I had the best luck when I ventured by myself. And so indeed I had, for I was seldom in any danger when I was by myself, or if I was, I got out of it with more dexterity than when I was entangled with the dull measures of other people, who had perhaps less forecast, and were more rash and impatient than I. For though I had as much courage to venture as any of them, yet I used more caution before I undertook a thing, and had more presence of mind when I was to bring myself off. I have often wondered even at my own hardiness another way, that when all my companions were surprised, and fell so suddenly into the hand of justice, and that I so narrowly escaped, yet I could not all this while enter into one serious resolution, to leave off this trade, and especially considering that I was now very far from being poor, that the temptation of necessity, which is generally the introduction of all such wickedness, was now removed, for I had near number 500 by me in ready money, on which I might have lived very well, if I had thought fit to have retired. But I say, I had not so much as the least inclination to leave off. No, not so much as I had before when I had but number 200 beforehand, and when I had no such frightful examples before my eyes as these were. From hence 'tis evident to me, that when once we are hardened in crime, no fear can affect us, no example give us any warning. I had indeed one comrade whose fate went very near me for a good while, though I wore it off too in time. That case was indeed very unhappy. I had made a prize of a piece of very good damask in a mercer's shop, and went clear off myself, but had conveyed the piece to this companion of mine, when we went out of the shop, and she went one way and I went another. We had not been long out of the shop, but the mercer missed his piece of stuff, and sent his messengers, one way and one another, and they presently seized her that had the piece, with the damask upon her. As for me, I had very luckily stepped into a house, where there was a lace chamber, up one pair of stairs, and had the satisfaction, or the terror indeed, of looking out of the window upon the noise they made, and seeing the poor creature dragged away in triumph to the justice, who immediately committed her to Newgate. I was careful to attempt nothing in the lace chamber, but tumbled their goods pretty much to spend time. Then bought a few yards of edging, and paid for it, and came away very sad-hearted indeed for the poor woman, who was in tribulation for what I only had stolen. Here again my old caution stood me in good stead, namely, that though I often robbed with these people, yet I never let them know who I was, or where I lodged, nor could they ever find out my lodging, though they often endeavored to watch me to it. They all knew me by the name of Moll Flanders, though even some of them rather believed I was she than knew me to be so. My name was public among them indeed, but how to find me out they knew not, nor so much as how to guess at my quarters, whether they were at the east end of the town or the west, and this wariness was my safety upon all these occasions. I kept close a great while upon the occasion of this woman's disaster. I knew that, if I should do anything that should miscarry, and should be carried to prison, she would be there and ready to witness against me, and perhaps save her life at my expense. I considered that I began to be very well known by name at the Old Bailey, though they did not know my face, and that if I should fall into their hands, I should be treated as an old offender. And for this reason I was resolved to see what this poor creature's fate should be before I stirred abroad, though several times in her distress I conveyed money to her for her relief. At length she came to her trial. She pleaded she did not steal the thing, but that one Mrs. Flanders, as she heard her called for she did not know her, gave the bundle to her, after they came out of the shop, and bade her carry it home to her lodging. They asked her where this Mrs. Flanders was, but she could not produce her, neither could she give the least account of me, and the mercer's men swearing positively, that she was in the shop, when the goods were stolen, that they immediately missed them, and pursued her, and found them upon her, thereupon the jury brought her in guilty, but the court, considering that she was really not the person that stole the goods, an inferior assistant, and that it was very possible she could not find out this Mrs. Flanders, meaning me, though it would save her life, which indeed was true I say, considering all this, they allowed her to be transported, which was the utmost favor she could obtain, only that the court told her that, if she could in the meantime produce the said Mrs. Flanders, they would intercede for her pardon. That is to say, if she could find me out, and hand me, she should not be transported. This I took care, to make impossible to her, and so she was shipped off in pursuance of her sentence a little while after. I must repeat it again, that the fate of this poor woman troubled me exceedingly, and I began to be very pensive, knowing that I was really the instrument of her disaster. But the preservation of my own life, which was so evidently in danger, took off all my tenderness, and seeing that she was not put to death, I was very easy at her transportation, because she was then out of the way of doing me any mischief, whatever should happen. The disaster of this woman was some months before that of the last recited story, and was indeed partly occasion of my governess proposing to dress me up in men's clothes, that I might go about unobserved, as indeed I did. But I was soon tired of that disguise, as I have said, for indeed it exposed me to too many difficulties. I was now easy as to all fear of witnesses against me, for all those that had either been concerned with me, or that knew me by the name of Mole Flanders, were either hanged or transported. And if I should have had the misfortune to be taken, I might call myself anything else, as well as Mole Flanders, and no old sins could be placed into my account. So I began to run a tick again with the more freedom, and several successful adventures I made, though not such as I had made before. We had at that time another fire happened not a great way off from the place where my governess lived, and I made an attempt there, as before, but as I was not soon enough before the crowd of people came in, and could not get to the house I aimed at, instead of a prize, I got a mischief, which had almost put a period to my life, and all my wicked doings together. For the fire being very furious, and the people in a great fright in removing their goods, and throwing them out of window, a wench from out of a window, threw a feather bed just upon me. It is true, the bed being soft, it broke no bones, but as the weight was great, and made greater by the fall, it beat me down, and laid me dead for a while. Nor did the people concern themselves much to deliver me from it, or to recover me at all. But I lay like one dead, and neglected a good while, till somebody going to remove the bed out of the way, helped me up. It was indeed a wonder the people in the house had not thrown other goods out after it, and which might have fallen upon it, and then I had been inevitably killed, but I was reserved for further afflictions. This accident, however, spoiled my market for that time, and I came home to my governess very much hurt and bruised, and frighted to the last degree, and it was a good while before she could set me upon my feet again. It was now a merry time of the year, and Bartholomew Fair was begun. I had never made any walks that way, nor was the common part of the fair of much advantage to me, but I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.